Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Song, and I hope you enjoyed it, and do definitely check out angiemathen.com, that you can check out more of her new songs from Sk Skeleton Arm, her new album. And of course, this is Andrew Fetter, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. I have a very special guest coming on, but before I do, there's a couple of things. Last weekend, I want to thank those who for coming out. It was quite exquisite trip in Las Vegas. I just did a book signing event. I was kicking off some of my tour here. Did a pretty good cool event out on Borders and Barnes Noble on One Store. And it went pretty good. I really enjoyed it, especially meeting very unique individuals. I always do. And for those who want to experience the out-of-body experience, just to let you know, keeping you an update, those who will be in the Southern California region, I just found out that my posts have booked me into two border stores, in August 7th. That's a Saturday at 1 p.m. I'll be in Oxnard and the Oxnard Borders. And that's at 241, Espalanade, it's spelled Espalanade Drive, and that's Oxnard. And then on August 15th at 1 p.m., and that's on a Sunday, I'm going to be at the Borders in Riverside, and that's at 3615 Riverside Plaza Drive. And that's August 15th. Should be a lot of fun. Haven't been into Oxnard in a while back, or Riverside, speaking of that. Now, next week, I have a very, very special guest. His name is Dr. Bernard Hosch, and he is an astrophysicist. He's also author of Purpose Guided Universe, Believing in Einstein, Darwin, and God. Should be a very fascinating show because he will be getting into where science and religion often blur. And that'll be sort of pretty much of a philosophical entourage. I guess I'll have to keep my alerts up there, especially when you're talking to an esteemed professor. And, of course, that's this coming weekend is 4th of July. And, speaking of, this is a major day for the United States. And sorry, Brits, it wasn't for you. But it does mark a very special day. And all I can say is, and I believe this holds truth even today, famous speech writings of back then, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, men, governments are instituted among men, deriving from their powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Indeed, would dictate that government long established should not be cause for light and transient causes, and according all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and absurdities pursuing invariably the same object invinces a design to reduce them under absolute deficit, it is out of their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide a new guard for their future security. Now, these words, let's go to school and they don't even know, is from the Declaration of Independence. And how much are they applicable today to our present government? And not just in the United States, but in all governments and institutions, whether they be by cleric or whatever form. This is really a declaration of humanity, which comes to my special guest, which is who has profoundly had an unbelievable showing here in Los Angeles of her show called The Oblivion Series at the Stellar Adler Theater, which she has played in part of what she called the human army element, and I would call the army of humanity. And I guess I'll have to explain as we discuss this, and you'll probably hear as an explanation. But I feel very honored to have her on such short notice during her stay here in the United States. I want to thank you, Justin Warrington, for coming on my show. And how are you today?
Thank you. I'm really good, Andrew. Thanks for having me. This is very exciting.
But let me ask you this. So those out there who aren't familiar with you, I know you've done a lot of projects both in acting and photography and in both front and behind the camera. Could you tell my those listening in a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, I'm born and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'm a West Coast girl, and I've been doing theater pretty much my whole life, always been on stage, and always felt I had some sort of obligation to use communication as a tool, and I guess you might call it awakening. So I've done some films, I've done some television. Right now I'm here in Los Angeles because of the play you mentioned, the Oblivion series. It's a one-act play that I've written, which is a series of monologues that explores life and politics and love and also awakening. So it's cool. We've got a 7-week run at the Stella Adler Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, and it's going well. I've got a lovely cast of women sharing this experience with me. And, it's really to get into a bit about the production, as you mentioned, my new human army. Is it time to talk about that? Do you want to get right into there, or where shall we go? Yeah? Is that cool?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm losing you. You're clicking off there. Maybe it's my side here. Maybe it's that some of that lunar stuff that's been happening lately.
Yeah.
They said we just went through a lunar eclipse just a couple days ago, last weekend, so maybe they're having after effects. But let me ask you this, because I saw your show a couple weeks and it was quite extraordinary. You have several lead, not really lead actresses, actually, that's sort of funny, but there's very paramount of several actors that really came out forefront. But it was
definitely
quite different in the uniqueness that you have performed, you've created that element. Let me ask you this, because getting into the particulars of your arts, because I know you get into music as well.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what would you say your influence, that you would say? Because most people ask you, you know, whether it's literature or books or music. Everybody asks, hey, if you're a musician, who's your influence? Or writer, who's your influence? Who would you say is your influence in your art or arts?
Wow. Of late, I would have to say Jon Stewart is my biggest influence. Because he manages to bring cold, hard facts about reality and manages to bring a lot of humor in, which I really, really appreciate. I think there's almost nothing more important than humor in this day and age to kind of keep us present and keep us dealing with, the heaviness that our world is currently facing. As an actress, my influences are Cate Blanchett and Meryl Streep and these wonderful, really heartfelt performers who really give it their all in telling human stories. Musically, my influences have been a lot of Ani DiFranco and Ben Harper and Bob Marley and, Sarah McLachlan. K.T. Tunstall is a big influence. I'm just kind of a folk singer, I guess, down at the end of the day, but I've been doing a lot more work in kind of house music and this kind of thing. Whatever venue will excite me and allow me to bring my voice to the forefront, But those are my main influences.
So you just basically divert from one area of art, let's say music. By the way, do you draw as well?
I don't actually draw. I at least I should say I haven't explored my painterly or side of that as of yet. But one day I plan to. I'd like to paint huge canvases. I think it's a beautiful art form. Yeah.
Do you in your now you have, so I saw, noticed that you had some music already cut out. Have you cut out a CD?
I don't have a CD yet. I'm recording with a couple of different producers, and I do have a MySpace page. It's Justine Warrington Music, and I'll actually be playing this July the 6th. It's a Tuesday night at a tavern in Hollywood. It's called, let me just see here, Crane's Hollywood Tavern, and it's a really great project. It's called Art United and Project Build, and it's a fundraiser for something called Caleb's Hope, which is a nonprofit charity that is working in war-torn northern Uganda and helping women and children and victims of human trafficking and child slavery and stuff like this. So I'll be performing at this benefit. It's just a musical benefit. There's going to be some other musicians and some stand-up comic. And it's this Tuesday, July 6th at Crane's Hollywood Tavern in Hollywood. So if anyone would like to come out to that and support an amazing cause, that's what I'm doing recently with my music. I'm just going to be playing some songs on my acoustic guitar.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing, because there's definitely nobody really talks about it. Everybody's still focused on issues of, you know, like Middle East and other things and Europe and stuff, but they never really realize the forgotten Africa and what's really going on. And they don't realize that we're definitely affected from many parts, just not one part. Let me ask you this, because I know it's from you. You started delving a little bit into your talking about comedy and stuff, and I noticed that you utilize a little bit of quirky humor within even in your some things are sort of serious.
Mm-hmm.
And even you even had one, I believe, in a play that you had one actress perform this very bizarre. She plays the comedian, and then all of a sudden goes off the deep end of, you know, what her own
childhood
situation, tragic.
A lighthearted stand-up comedy act about childhood sexual abuse.
And so it's like, wow, it's smack in the face. I hope she doesn't pick any gum off the floor off that one.
It's true.
Speaking of,
Teresa Crespo plays that role, and it's one of my favorite pieces. It's it is a stand-up comic who is trying out some new material, and she knows it's racy material, but she's given it a shot at a comedy club. And it basically tells a story about how when she watched the documentary about Roman Polanski, about him, you know, leaving America and his whole thing, and he was recently arrested last year, I guess, finally, after this, you know, trial that's been years and years in the making. But it comes back to the personal with this woman who is trying on some new comedic material and talks about, you know, watching Roman Polanski's documentary and finally realizing by watching that documentary that something had also happened to her as a young child. And it took this whole, you know, epic journey in order for her to come to terms with that. So it's rather an abrupt coming to terms on stage in front of a live audience. But I think it makes the point.
That's sort of like dark humor. So do you mix up a lot of dark humor?
Definitely. Well, the thing in life is, you know, I mean, I have to say I've been pretty lucky. I've had a really lovely life, but I've also obviously gone through a lot of hardships, as everyone does in their life. And, again, going back to the comedy, it's like sometimes that's the only thing that really gets us through really hard times. Dark comedy is certainly one of my favorite genres to explore. And, I think it has a strong place in transformation and in awakening in general, because if we're too afraid to talk about these subjects, then they stay dormant and they stay eating us up alive inside. But if we can own it and move on, that's a really important tool we have as human beings, I think.
It's good, because I mean, humor basically allows us to sort of laugh at ourselves. At the same time, you know, we do have to, you know, life is short, and we have to you know, live at the moment and
absolutely,
a lot of respect and enjoy things at the moment. We get too
absolutely
caught up. Many people get too caught up in their 9-to-5 or drama, or constantly regurgitating their same BS drama.
Absolutely.
Diverting themselves and performing these separation, diversions, and hate games.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a way of, you know, definitely. And Speaking of, because you remind me of several other, this goes back to my age, like the people sort of like the Richard Pryors, the Lenny Bruces, and the George Carlins.
Yeah.
And they were definitely in Hick, who I heard they made it, just made a movie of. I'm surprised they don't make a movie out of George Carlin yet.
Yeah, no kidding. Who's working on that for sure? We must.
Yeah, really. Because he was sort of way ahead. And it's sort of funny because even in literature, a lot of people who write sort of cross humor, they don't get really well known and or brought up. I remember Lenny Bruce came out in the 60s, and then you know, it was like almost 15, 20 years later, till they really, in the late 70s, so they made him even a movie and recognized what he had done. And then, which really opened up doors to a lot of other people, but he was really showing the hypocritical in the social situations of society.
Mm-hmm.
In the same terms, it reminds me of Kurt Vonnegut had done the same thing. He wrote back in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and yet his books were like basically collecting dust until the 70s, late 60s, 70s, actually 70s when they really came out, and became forefront where it was required college reading. In fact, that's when I read it, was in college.
Yeah, wonderful.
And it was just so far ahead, and it was like, mm-hmm. and you can see back then how things, God, how the hell he even walked around writing this material, and it's amazing.
No kidding, and especially in those times when oppression was so much more prevalent, just in a, you know, neighborly basis even, you know, where people are reporting each other for not following the right religion or the right government or something. I mean,
yeah, and if you say something off the wall, you're a nut job, and it's sort of funny because,
mm-hmm.
you know, today for different things, if you were to talk to average people and you talk about, you know, I'll just say something hypothetical, even if some people talk whether you believe there's extraterrestrials or not,
mm-hmm.
20 years ago you're a total whack job. Now it's about, well, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, you know, and
mm-hmm.
things are changing, questionable things. And
absolutely.
And people, when
the
they
quickening.
Talk about,
I think it's the quickening. I've always had a belief in that
the quickening. What is that? Is that from a movie?
I don't think it's from a movie. No, I don't know. Lots of people are like, yes, the quickening, and it's just about. I mean, I guess what very little I know about it, because I'm certainly no expert. I've only ever touched the surface of this, but the whole 2012 and the Mayan, you know, prophecies and that. But it's actually a magnetic and like the planets are just aligning differently, and that's changing the level of vibration on this earth, and it's changing the level of vibration by which we are all attuned to, because we're all energy, right? And so that is, in my understanding, and I say very limited understanding, but causing a quickening, which is causing consciousness to, I guess, expand. It's causing everything to speed up and expand, not only consciousness, but also negative energy, you know, that it's just, things are actually just changing, what do you call it, magnetically, and that's affecting us.
Yeah, well,
so
we are.
I'm pretty curious to check into more of that information, to tell you the truth, because that's kind of exciting, because we're energy and we're matter, and we're largely water as human beings, and it's, you know,
well,
of course we're
going to
be affected by the poles of the gravitational fields of all the planets.
Yeah, we're actually space, but
well, when you get on down to there, right?
Yeah, and in that space we're all energy, so technically we're all energy, and our souls are energy, and our thoughts are energy, and we're pulsating energy. We're just waves of energy, and when we're generating thoughts, those are generating frequencies. So if
thoughts are
as the planets are moving and shifting in different areas like they are, it's moving into a new alignment, which you're talking about, which is what the real climate change is. And that's affecting people as themselves, because the frequency is increasing. And you're not the first, you're like one of a lot. I've had many guests on, and there's plenty of other people on from different regions talking pretty much the same thing, and more people seem to be coming more and more awakened of that, if they call it the awakening.
Yeah.
Oh, I know why I was thinking when you said the quickening. Remember the movie The Highlander? That was the quickening, the lightning shooting, and they're all can only be one. Anyway.
Oh, hilarious. Maybe that's what it's from, although I don't know if I've actually seen that movie, but maybe it's part of my psyche.
That's funny that you said that. Get the quickening. sort of funny. But But anyway, it's interesting because I see in different areas, different people seem to be sort of like more or less waking up opposed to. But then I do see a lot of people seriously trying to hold on, and it seems almost weird. It's like like this when you're talking to them and they're still holding on all things. They're the ones who are looking sort of. It's starting to become an oddity, I think.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Once you understand what's really going on, you can never really go back. And it's like being aware of it.
Exactly. Once you know the truth, you can't lie to yourself anymore, anyone else.
You know, and what's really going on, and it's more things start opening up and further and further, and then you start being conscious of what the governments are really doing, what people are doing, what media.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even need a. It's like. It reminds me, somebody said, oh, I don't want to watch TV, and I can't do this because all the information in there is lies and da-da-da and misguided. But, you know, I told somebody, it's like, you know, when you watch movies and see as a kid, you'll believe the scary movies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you go, like, Universal Studios and see how they actually make movies, so those people have never been in the movies industry, and you see them, and then you realize it's all make-believe, then you go watch it and go, oh, wow, I know the magic trick. And then when you see it, you see them making the magic trick, and then you have an understanding of what's up.
And
so,
I think that's really what's going on with the whole horrible oil disaster, is that people are, even people that weren't necessarily awake to this before, are now realizing that our dependence on oil is a really, really, really huge problem. And I think this is cause for a massive awakening around the globe.
Yeah, and they're also questioning the realities of corporations and what the influence is, and what, like, for example, what President Obama, if he's really have leadership qualities, or if he is really the person they say he is,
mm-hmm.
and I believe he's basically a puppet, but it's like, you know, if he really was the Theodore Roosevelt, he'd get in there and go, okay, we're putting our army in here, the engineers here, okay, you can do it, and they have bacteria that actually they can just drop in, and it'll just eat up all the oil really quickly, start capping off stuff. If they want to take the bull by the horns, but they haven't, and you can see pretty much definitely why they're doing it. It's sort of obvious they're trying to decimate the economy and also at the same time create diversions. So
it's quite fascinating what's going on. I have to agree with you. We can go to space, but we can't stop that oil from coming out. Like, we have the technology, we have the capacity, we're brilliant as a human race. Like, we're utterly brilliant and extraordinarily creative. So I have to agree with you that there's some other thing going on that's not about saving our Mother Earth or taking care of those pelicans down there.
Right, exactly. It's the same token as, like, we right now have the ability to have, right now, free energy. I mean, literally.
Oh, yeah. In my entire lifetime, the capacity has already been there, available. And you know.
Well, John Searle has his electromagnetic elements.
Right.
That was real simple. And, you know, even solar energy they have. I was at the Hopi, and my film partner, when we were shooting there, we were, like, in shock how they have now free energy. Basically, they have solar panels sitting on their roofs, and they have free electricity.
Exactly. Off the grid.
All across
the
United States. Yeah, stick that across all around the United States, and then have windmills running across the Nevada sands, you know.
And you know, we probably will, as soon as whoever wants control of that monetarily gets it.
Yeah, but
as
you know,
as it becomes extraordinarily equally as profitable as
oil
is,
it'll wipe.
Have it.
Yeah, but you know they don't want it, just because if it was implemented, it would change the dynamics of having the necessity of a monetary system. Only thing would be value is services, and people, and that could be done through exchanges. So it's like, eventually, you know, it would turn into, sound like Star Trek, if people could turn into helping each other or growing themselves or getting to their art or science or discovery.
Absolutely.
It would change things dramatically. And I personally still think we're actually heading toward that direction.
I have endless hope in humanity. I have endless hope in general. I think it's a quote by Desmond Tutu, but he says, I'm not an optimist. I'm a prisoner of hope. And that really stuck with me because it's not easy to be optimistic in this day and age. But we certainly don't know enough to be pessimistic, as I believe Hazel Henderson says. We just don't know enough to be pessimistic.
I wouldn't want to use the word hope, because doubt in Taoism, they used to say hope is as hollow as fear.
Oh, really? Oh, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, because it shows that you don't have trust.
Well, then maybe faith or belief is a better word.
Yeah, that's probably
belief it. In the inherent goodness of human beings, you know?
Yeah.
I've been going to Marianne Williamson's lectures here in L.A. on Tuesday nights at the Regent Theater, and she's so wonderful. She talks about how once we all get our vibration back to, like, the love vibration, that, you know, people may come into the world like a Hitler or like something like that, but that they won't be able to enroll anyone in their agenda any longer because we'll be back in our original state of love, and that it just won't fly. It'll be like Teflon, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I dig that, and I believe that. I totally believe that. I believe love outshines the power of anything else.
Well, a couple of weekends ago, I saw Bashar, which was actually quite fast. Mm. It was unbelievable. And he said something pretty extraordinary. Actually, I asked him personally a question, one of the questioner people. And he, because I was asking about 2012 through 2012, and he used a paraphrase that humanity's been basically, we're like the rubber band. We went through one extreme, to learn to go to the correct way, we went through the extreme dark side, if you want to call it negative, thought patterns and things and vibrations on one side, mm-hmm. and now the rubber band is actually flinging straight across the other way, and as it does, we're going to just be flying so fast in such a short period, not little but like evolution but revolution in mm-hmm. realistic of looking even linear time, because there's not really linear time anyway, but mm-hmm. That we'll be moving so fast in the next few years to a different way of looking at things, because we'll be our vibrational areas are going to change so fast, and because of it, those who are opening themselves to a higher vibration and allowing their increasing their vibrational, which also increases their perceptual being, because then you can see further clicks, which is a whole other thing.
Right.
Then sometimes people around you actually who haven't caught up, well, everybody will. But you'll be going, and during this period, some people go, well, you'll be talking to them, and it's like you're not even in front of them. They won't even understand you, because you're
uh-huh.
like your vibrational areas are so different. And sometimes you'll miss people in your life. They'll suddenly disappear out of nowhere, or you to them. It's not that they can be right next to you or right near you. It's just like, oh, gee, I wonder what happened so-and-so, and they live right next to you or right near you. And it's because the energies are so shifted. And I personally have noticed that among certain people, that I'll be talking to them straightforward, and or they are like, I'm not even there, or they're not there, which is sort of frustrating for me sometimes, especially something, because it's part of my thing is to talk with people. But it's sort of, I noticed that more and more lately, that it's changing, I think, you know. But let me ask you this, and I know mm-hmm. some people get really offended over it, but you know, your issue of let me ask you, what, because your issue of non-divisiveness of mm-hmm. looking at things within humanity and as a wholesome of, you know, not by race or sexual orientation or color or ethnicity
yeah.
or belief systems, what are your thoughts then on only situations where there's whether it's entertainment only or this only or this club only? And
well, I think all those things have a place. Obviously, they've been needed. You know, I mean, I was raised by women in my family who were really original feminists. You know, and they had to be, because we had only just barely gotten the vote, and we had to segregate in order to empower. But I think that in my generation, at least, and the younger generations coming up, I think, at least in our world, at least in our, like, you know, first world in America or in Canada or whatever, it's really become more about the all of humanity being what's, you know, we all need to rise together as a team at this point. I think it has served its purpose, you know, to be like, we just got to talk about this particular racial issue or this particular thing. But I think we have to embrace all of that and have it be our building block to the real agenda, which is we got to all get together and get on the same page. Otherwise, humanity is what's at stake. The human race is actually what's at stake. It's no longer about, oh, I'm a woman and I'm oppressed sexually or however that might be, or financially or something. It's really become about, hey, humanity, we're at stake. We're all at stake. And it really is about the togetherness. It really is about the one love. You know, I was raised on Bob Marley, and I'm so happy that I was, because that's, you know, a really great through line kind of soundtrack to my life is just this kind of, yeah, I hope that answers your question. I think we've moved beyond that.
It's time to wake up as a team. Yeah, people are still, and it seems like they're still caught up in it, and it seems like you're right. It's, maybe it had one point because it gave their way of expressing themselves that where they weren't being able to express, or let me put it this way, it's a sense of self-worth. If you find yourself and to me personally, it's your physical form is just one else, a very small element, but some people are so caught up in their physical form that their, you know, sense of being, whether it's, you know, straight or gay or woman or man or black or white, they had to replenish their self-worthiness for what they are in a society that may have diminished it in that particular area and lost the power, whatever you want to call it, and then our sense of self-worth. So it did have a temporary function. It was almost like what you said. It was pretty interesting. It's like they had back in the 60s, starting in the late 60s and 70s, where they had basically programs to help minorities. In particular, it was focused on mainly because during the time blacks, for example, who were growing up into inner cities, had, you know, they had a very substandard education compared to average whites. And the same thing with Latinos, the same thing. And yet now it's changed to such a degree that in reality, that thing that has happened, it was supposed to level the playing field, is no longer realistically needed. We're already there. And, you know, unfortunately, people were still holding on, and now it's being diverted instead of being utilized for what it was at the time, which they should do, of an inclusive nature, not exclusive. People have taken advantage of it now as opposed for what it really was. So, you know, people, let's say, if they're not even from this country and come here and then jump on that and claim minority, when, wait a second, that wasn't what the purpose was. It wasn't to, you know, absorb new people coming. It was really to level playing fields for people who have been growing here generation and generation to level the playing field.
Uh-huh.
The same thing what you're saying is like the only situation was utilized necessary just the self thing, but now it's time to move on. You know, it's time to.
I think I agree with you in part. I think it's a touchy subject because I don't think we can tell anyone that their experience of their own personal oppression is like over. You know what I mean? Nor would I say that mine personally is either, but I like to think beyond that for sure, and I do believe that that's the case in many scenarios now. I absolutely do. But I think it's still important to embrace all of that and have it all rise to this, you know, if we're talking about a new agenda for humanity or whatever it is. I would be, you know, it would be hard for me to say that definitely, yes, it is done, because it certainly in many parts of the world is not done, and, you know, this important work is still needed. But, you know, absolutely, for the sake of this conversation about where we're headed and what's going on, like, absolutely, like, we're just, you know, it's time to be together. Let's get together and feel all right.
Yeah, my point was getting to the point where, which is really the problem, and personally, we tend to put Band-Aids on things, and that's the mic problem, is, you know, the reality is, if we continue putting on Band-Aids on elements, you know, on not fixing the real resolutions of the problems in the world, and if you look at them as problems, they become problems instead of looking at them as first challenges. There's a whole other thing. But if you look at things as with the issues of the real source of it, and is because people identify themselves as being separated because they're consistently
educated. Identifying with separation, identifying with fear, those are the things that are going to constantly cause us to lose what we really want, which is a oneness, which is a you know, a feeling community and solidarity, and we can actually live that.
Yeah, but it goes in further. It goes into the first step is, you know, there is a point people don't realize the story of Adam and Eve, for example. It wasn't about, you know, there was a real Adam and Eve. It was a story of how humanity is supposed to be. It's supposed to, we are not separated from nature. We're not separated from Earth. Mm-hmm. We're part of the same. We're like sitting on our Garden of Eden, and we created our own illusion of now that, you know, the bristles and stuff. We've created our own environment by keep making our separating ourselves from Earth, separating ourselves from nature, separating from the universe, thus separating ourselves from each other. And that's actually an illusion, because in reality we're not separated. In reality we're all. So that's where, if we take away that initial thing, it's like we remove that cancer, because what we did is create the cancer. All, see, because everything we're talking about now beyond that is the symptoms, and you can never fix symptoms.
Exactly.
You know, of a disease, you can only fix the cold, but you're never getting rid of the cold, you know.
Exactly, which is the same with our Western medicine system, which it's like we're very just, once it's already established as a disease, then we can think about operating, but no one thinks about prevention ahead of time, like, let's just have really healthy bodies, you know.
Right, exactly.
We can do that. We can.
Well, lots
of people do it.
That's the same thing with humanity, if humanity looks at it. I mean, I lived in the Middle East for 6 years, and it's amazing how Western societies and in Europe still don't get it, and they fall right into the hate games of my side is the right side and you're the wrong side and we hate you. Mm-hmm. It's always a hate game. Mm-hmm. And I remember it's like a situation like in Lebanon where there'd be rockets flying from one hill to another hill, and this would be Christians, Shiite, Sunni, Druze. And you watch rockets flying back and forth, and they're killing each other. What? My God's better than your God. And it's the same thing with the Israelis and the Palestinians, the Iraqis with the Sunnis, Shiites. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole area there is basically who God, how far has it evolved, because they're still in this illusion of separatism. The same thing in Europe, the same thing we have even in the United States. I don't know how much of in Canada, but in the United States, they're constantly the liberals versus the conservatives, which side are you on? I mean, it's pushed down our throat on MSNBC and their Fox News. And they're
Pick a side.
And you know what's funny is, if I remember in the beginning, a long time ago, when I used to I did writing for several newspapers and columns in Vegas, for example. And I'd be more or less tendency on certain things with liberals, but when I'd say something, they would, you know, justify, they look at the term conservative, if you want to call it that word labeled, or libertarian, they'd freak out, because they go, wait, what side are you on? I said, I'm on nobody's side. You guys don't get it. I just tell how I feel and what it is. I'm not this team or that team. And
claim a team. I'm on a team. I'm on the team of love.
Yeah, but they're always trying to force you on a team. I was like, I remember marching in for Anti-Yucca Mountain, and we'd sit there with groups, and they'd be talking other issues, and they'd be, which club are you on, what team are you on? And I says, I'm on, you know, I'm not anybody's team, but, you know, humanity's team, you know.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's amazing. But, so let me ask you this, because in the future, what you're trying to propose, I know through your comedy and through your plays, do you have any new plays that you're working on, or new screenplays or writings that you're trying to
put together? Some comedy for the web right now, but it's unreleased as of yet. I haven't had the official launch, so I'm not at liberty to discuss it too much, but coming soon, so if you check back
on my liberty website. I like that.
If you check back on my website in the coming months, I'll
about freedom here? Were we just talking about freedom?
But the work that I'm focusing on, some of the writing has been further to the monologue that Holly does in my play, you know, the dark comedy of realities of the world. I'm working on some issues of human trafficking. It's really one of the most horrifying things I've come across in my recent studies. We just had the Olympics in Vancouver, in my hometown, And I was appalled to discover, just in my research, that human trafficking grows exponentially during times of large international sporting events, like the Super Bowl and the Olympics. For some reason,
and
it's big business. It's a huge
Cup.
Industry. They're just kidnapping women and children and drugging them and turning them into sex slaves who eventually just die because they're so drugged and so, you know, I don't want to go into too much disgusting detail, but it's really one of the most awful human atrocities that's occurring on a really big business level. It's hand in hand with big business. So I'm doing some comedy on that.
That's sort of weird. How the hell can you do a comedy on something like that? That's
check cool. back in the future.
Oh my God, that's like what's that evil dude, the Austrian guy who had his own kids in a cellar and making a comedy out of that.
Yeah, I mean, not that I'm making light of it at all. I'm certainly not making light of it, but I'm trying to pass on the information in a way that people can receive it. Because, I mean, I watch so many little YouTube documentaries about human trafficking, and I just want to cry and slip my wrists at the end of them. But it's important that the information gets out. I just don't know how much it can be received when it's constantly, and that goes with any difficult subject, like how many more oily pelicans can I look at? I want to jump out the window. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I do, it is important for me to be able to laugh, and not that anything is remotely funny about that. It most certainly isn't. But again, I go back to, you know, we need to be able to laugh at our condition if we're going to be able to deal with our condition, you know, or cry about it. Like, I mean, all of the above, absolutely. But I think that at least that's where I get off. I mean, like I said, Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, Bill Maher, they have all these really funny scenarios dealing with absolutely horrifying situations. And that helps my world move on, you know, that helps me, you know, deal with things in a better way. And, you know, also just the science of laughter in general is that when you're laughing, it's one of the most strong emotions that makes us present and able to receive new information. You know, there's a film called Laughology by a Toronto director. Just came out last year, Laughology, and it goes into the science of laughter, and it really says how we're able to be present and we're able to receive new information, so it's like our brain's open and we can learn. We can, you know, and I think that's part of our transformation. That's part of our what's going to help us be able to transform and evolve. I think comedy's going to help us evolve, and music.
Yeah.
That's what
isn't
I think.
Isn't it only like true, I'm not sure if this is true, but isn't it, I'm assuming from trying to recollect, isn't it only true that only dolphins and apes are the only ones that laugh?
Oh, you know, that rings a bell. I don't know.
I know dolphins laugh, and I remember orangutans and chimpanzees laugh.
Isn't that amazing? And we laugh. We just laugh and laugh. Like, that's like, what a gift that we have that. What a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what it did. Somebody, if ever, you talk about the measurements of laughter. I wonder how that affects your vibrational area, you know. People always talk of love. I'm just curious. No, you just brought up something as curiosity.
Absolutely.
I wonder what it does.
Watch the film. I'm sure that it touches on that in Laughology. I'm sure it touches on that. There's trailers on YouTube. You can watch the trailers. You may be able to watch.
But does it get into the
sure.
esoterics of like your frequencies and stuff like that?
Well, it does. They have scientists recording, you know, brain waves and things like that, if I recall, you know, and showing that the energy does change, the vibration does change, and in a positive way. I mean, laughter has been used for healing for a long, long time. You know, cancer patients and people that really need to go through some massive physical healing. Laughter is a key ingredient.
Well, I know they just developed an understanding in quantum physics. They understand for example, DNA that the energy of love, for example, cause and effect expands our DNA, actually opens our like a spring, and it changes what it starts producing. When its closure produces a different thing. So, and basically found out DNA is actually more of a communication device of our own thoughts. So I was curious of what if it opens up a love, probably on the same mixture would be, you know, I guess laughter would be a form of love now, wouldn't it?
I would agree. I mean, it makes you so happy, and love is happiness, right?
Yeah.
You know, we don't, It's exciting to me when you break it down, like you're saying, like in the physics plane or realm or the science realm, because it really does prove. I mean, I think I mentioned this to you before in an earlier conversation, but one of my favorite books is The Mozart Effect, and it's about scientifically how listening to Mozart can make us more intelligent. You know, it's just quite amazing. Like we're actually miraculous beings of, you know, infinite creativity, and we have the. That's what blows me away about being in this reality and growing up in this world and having all this information available to me. I'm like, what? But we're so amazing. How can we be so very bad and sad and ugly? You know, it kind of blows my mind, the dichotomy. And I get that there's a yin and a yang, and the energy, you know, without darkness there can be no light. But I can't really wrap my head around that, because I'm like, it's just better when there's just more light. It's just more fun. Come on, people. You know, that's why I wrote this, my new human army recruitment, which I'm all inviting you all to join, the new human army. I know you have your own as well, but we can maybe form them all up together and get recruits. We need new members, new human army of hot people with brains who make stuff happen.
There's a definitely entourage of people have been forming, merging groups from all across to the internet through Facebook and different elements.
Certainly. Oh, yeah.
And they're all sort of converging. You know, they have their different names and stuff, but they're all doing the same. And they're slowly merging and cross-lapping to each other, which is pretty...
Yeah. And that's the thing, because like attracts like, right?
Yeah, pretty much, because I've noticed that in a lot of stuff. Like people that I know of that were connected, and they're doing these, like, special meditation things and thought things, and then there's other people reconnecting on different elements of universality, of different things, of trying to raise vibrational things, and it just...
Oh, yeah. Marianne Williamson is put out to her community that at noon every day we set an intention to think well about the oil spill and to help the earth heal from that, you know, whether it's prayer or whatever you want to call that. That's, you know, a collective thought to bridge that and have
actually
that.
It does work. I mean, there was during the 80s, there was a group that came out, and they did this test where they actually took a whole group of, and they actually did transmeditation, and they threw out this thoughts of love, and they did, I think, for 60 or 90 days, and into the in Lebanon during the 80s, and during that time, there was actually, for some reason, there was no violence. It's totally subsided. So, okay, that was by coincidence. Well, they take the same group, and then they went to South Central L.A.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Excuse me, and they did the same thing, and for a month there was no gang activity, totally shut down. There was no violence.
Oh, my God, amazing.
Of gangs. So it was amazing how, you know, and if that was on a world scale, you know, what would happen. There is definitely something to that, you know.
And you know that story? It's a movie, a French film, Joyeux Noël, and it's a testament to the power of music in that same way, whereas the story goes, and it happened in World War II, I guess, as well, with playing the song Lily Marlene, that when the song was played over the radio, you know, to all the troops at Christmas, fighting ceased to be. Everyone just paused and had a moment of peace. You know, and enjoyed this song. So it's proven. It's been done. Let's just keep doing it.
Yeah, well, maybe we should start putting out thoughts to for the Uganda situation too.
Oh yeah, I mean everywhere that needs healing, like everywhere that, because there's, I mean, how many areas? You want? Let's make a list. We don't have time. It's a year-long radio program
to make a list
of everything that needs healing. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think thinking just good thoughts in general, thinking well about people, thinking well about the planet, you can be as specific as you want or as general as you want, and just keep beaming that love, because we need you. We need it. It's time.
Definitely we need to increase it, that's for sure, but I think it's on its way. At one time, I was sort of pessimistical, like 10 years, 13 years ago, but now I'm more optimistical, I guess. I guess I'm the smiling Buddha here.
That's funny. It's like mystical and optimist at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. That's like what somebody said, use the word imagine. Has, you know, I and I in image. But Yeah, and people can be free of their imagination too, and so that is a link to it. But how would somebody? First of all, just reiterate, because I know you still have a couple. You still have your show going. You're at the.
I do. Yeah, we're running every weekend, Saturday nights and Sunday matinees, until July 18th. So there's just three more weekends actually, but no show on the 4th of July, because we'll be celebrating freedom, such as it is.
and freedom and independence. And sorry for all my British friends again.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Well, I'm half British. I'm half to blame. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So then, the tail between their legs. Okay, in the Tea Party, or now they're called Teabaggers.
But it runs Estella Adler Theater, Hollywood Boulevard. I invite you to join the new Human Army and pick up where John Lennon left off and declare that war is over, starting now. All war everywhere, now and forever.
Definitely. And how would somebody be able to contact you?
My website, justinewarrington.com. Google is really instant access. I'm on Facebook. I'm on MySpace. Although MySpace, I'm not really doing the MySpace so much anymore. I'm on Twitter. Miss J Dub on Twitter. That's MissJDub. And there's links all over. I've got a YouTube site as well.
And you said your show's lasting till when?
July the 18th. So three more
July
weekends.
18th. And how good can they get tickets online?
You can get tickets online at the Los Angeles Women's Theater Project. If you Google Los Angeles Women's Theater Project, you will find their list of current shows. And I believe there's a special on now that if you buy one ticket at the group rate, we're now offering them at the group rate for $15, and if you buy one online through their website, that you also get to bring a friend for free. So it's basically two for $15, but you got to buy it through the website.
Wow, okay. Everybody hear that? Definitely got to go see it. Saw at opening. Definitely a great, great show.
Thank you.
And Justin, thank you for coming on my show.
Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Thank you, and I wish everybody a truly blessed weekend, and have basically love and light, and as Justin just said, join the human army, or I say the army of humanity. Be aware of light. Love and light, and God bless you, and I close with Hang Around by Ruby Friedman Orchestra. God bless you. Thank you.
I'm busier than you are, so don't expect a call. Everybody wants some, but no one gets it all. So I'm tight. That's why I let you hang around. You cut the pain in half.